This is the Home Tech Podcast, the JPEG to RAW special edition, recorded on August 16th, 2012. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in just a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. A cold front came through. We're down in the 70s after, it seems like, an eternity in 100-plus weather. And we post the show each week with world-class show notes out there at the AverageGuy.tv. You can contact me or contact the show, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. Track me down on Twitter, just at Jay Collison. You can follow the show schedule anytime we make changes to it or any special podcasts that are coming up, and I'll talk about that here in a second. You can follow the account at TheAverageGuyTV. We also have all the links to automatically subscribe, download, or stream the audio or video podcast to iTunes, YouTube, Zoom, Stitcher, many of the other podcasts are the other podcatchers available out there on the front page of theAverageGuy.tv. And, of course, if you need a hand with that, drop me a note, either email or Twitter, and I can give you a hand doing that. Of course, you can always find us now on Reddit, YouTube, iTunes, Google Plus, or any of the other, I should say Facebook, any of the other social platforms just by searching The Average Guy Podcast. And please leave some comments, likes, votes, plus ones, or any other helpful tidbits while you're out there. I want to say thanks to those who signed up during the Drobo contest that we did, and we got many good, Mike and I both got many good reviews out there on iTunes, and of course that stuff always helps, so we appreciate you guys doing that. Don't forget, we've just posted an Amazon affiliate link as well. Of course, if you're a JPEG to RAW listener, you want to be doing that over on Mike's page, but if you're a home tech listener, you can head out. If you're going to buy anything through Amazon, we have a link. We make a couple cents off every purchase, and that goes towards paying for the bandwidth and all the other fun toys that we get to use and give away on the show. Then I also want to remind you, I put a tweet out today, and some of you saw it already, but I'll remind you that we actually have a LastPass contest going on, just open today. So if you are a LastPass free user, or you're wondering what I'm talking about with LastPass, of course, that's a password vault application that, you know, if you're having trouble remembering all your passwords, and now there's, it seems like you have a gazillion passwords that you have to keep track of. Most of us just have one master password and use that for everything, and that's a horrible idea in these days of security breaches with different sites like LinkedIn and such. And LastPass is one of those applications where you can go out and you can actually sign up for free. They have a free service, and then they have a premium service. And we have some premium service codes that we're going to give away between now and Tuesday. So next Tuesday, actually a representative from LastPass will be on the show. Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern, out at theAverageGuy.tv live. And if you want to join us out there, this will be a contest that you actually have to be there and present to win. So you got to come out, listen to the show, go out to theAverageGuy.tv/live. And if you're in chat and available, we'll start drawing names right out of chat, and I might even have a little Facebook contest during the show. So you want to be out for that. If you want to know how to manage your passwords and get some more information that's deep inside the confines of the LastPass security walls, join us Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk about that on Rich's Random Podcast Generator. Rich will be there with me. All right, the big news this week, of course, is the Drobo, and we're not going to give that away quite yet. Christian is thinking in his head of a number. Don't say it yet, Christian. Just let that
I'm ready.
Grind around inside your head. And so we're going to give the Drobo away here in a little bit on the show. I do want to introduce everybody that came on real quick. Of course, I just talked to him a second ago. He's all things BIOS mods. He's back from Langley, and he's in Buffalo. Christian Johnson. Christian-johnson.net. Is that what the new site?
Yes.
The new site that you have out there. You're kind of your own. And this is kind of big for your generation, is having this online resume. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing at Christian-johnson.net.
Right, so I'm in the college application process, which means it's a battle, and you have to have a battle strategy going in if you wanna come out on the top stack. So, you really, one of the biggest things is making sure you have all your information in one spot. And traditionally, that's, you know, the one page resume or XYZ application with supplement, but where I've had kind of a meld of both academic things I've been applying to and work-related things I'm applying to, you know, there aren't really, at least in the work field, all these predefined rules beyond what professionals have in terms of expectations for a resume. So What I've done is I've put together a website written from scratch in .NET,
Of course. Of
C
course you wrote
Sharp.
it from scratch.
Yeah, so, and it's basically, it's ChristianNet, and the little subtitle is Digitizing Footprints, and that's exactly what it is. So what I'm trying to do is put all of the things that I've achieved, worked on, accomplished, and that are significant to either college applications or work experience or whatever it may be in one spot where the prospective employer or college rep or whoever it may be starts at a page that loads the resume, right? So they get to this home page and you'll see that it basically, you don't get much info right here. You get a couple little teasers, and I'm still kind of working on those, but basically what you're getting is the overview of the major categories, and you're basically getting a block of text that says, hey, I'd like you to see this stuff, but you kind of need to be authenticated too. And so what I do is whenever I'm in, starting to talk to someone about a particular thing or in a particular process, I say, here's a login to my site. It has everything. So that way I can get an idea of what people are logging on and looking at and how it's pertaining to the application process as a whole. But from a functional standpoint of the website, so they log in and then what? So once they log in, that menu that you see starts with the resume, so they get to see that hallmark resume that, colleges want the exact format, that professionals want, like this rigid format. Because what they don't want is they don't want just this laundry list of stuff that they can't sort and make headways of. They just want the meat and potatoes, and they want the clean cut bullets. So it starts like that. And then what this website does is, well, what if I'm a prospective employer and I want to know more? So I see this thing in the resume. I'm not really sure about it. It looks intriguing. It looks impressive, but I don't get more because of the format of what a resume is itself. So all they have to do is say, this probably falls under music career or development experience or programming, and they can click that tab and it's going to start from the top and work all the way down, and they can get as general and generic or as specific as they want in regards to the content. So,
Yeah. I mean, it really is a dynamic resume for you, right? And it's all online, and it's password protected, so you can give out if you're at a college campus and you want to give them some information, you can say, hey, you can see my resume, but I'm not going to let you go beyond that. Or, right? Do you have it broken down to that level yet, or is it still kind of you can see everything or you can see nothing?
Well, yeah, so I really don't have, like right now, you'll see if you try and click resume and stuff, it's just going to prompt you for a login.
Yeah.
Ideally, I would make like a public version and a
Right.
private version,
Right.
but still, even once you're logged in, like the resume you get, if you hit the print button, it's what I would hand you if you were like, if you said, I want an official, resume, non-dynamic type stuff. But the neat thing about this is that as I do stuff and add stuff, I just got to add it to the website and, make a reference to it in the
Yeah.
resume. So it's
So
like you never lose it.
it's a dynamically updating resume, so to speak. And it really is the future. I mean, I've heard of this before you started doing it, but you're the real first implementation that I've actually seen where someone did that. When I hire tech folks, I often ask them, show me your online portfolio. And that's real common for you photographers. You guys have been doing that for a while, but for everybody else, not a lot of folks are doing that yet. But Christian, certainly your generation is starting to go this way with that and publish these things online for folks to look at. So anyways, good. Christian-Johnson.net, if you want to just kind of get an idea what that framework looks like. And Christian, welcome to the show.
Thank
All
you.
right, without any further ado, we got the hosts from JPEG to RAW on. We were with them on Tuesday evening and had a smashing time of talking about hard drives and hard drive enclosures. And we got to kind of geek out on your show, which was fun. Today, I wanted you guys to come on our show and talk photography. Of course, everybody knows at this point, everybody knows Mike Howard. He's on our show, it seems like, every third week or so. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great. And now, Christian, you're saying I can't just use the About Me page on Facebook as my resume?
Everyone has to start somewhere.
Remember that, Mike. Everyone has to start somewhere.
So he's saying it is a start.
Yeah.
Well, just not a good start.
I never said that.
I'm doing fine. I'm very excited to give away the Drobo tonight. I don't know who Christian's going to pick. Christian doesn't know what numbers are there. We'll explain a little bit how that organized a little bit later whenever Jim's ready for me to. But I'm very excited to see who wins tonight. It would be awesome if they're out there in live chat. But you don't have to be out there.
Have to be present to win. So,
although it would really be nice if they
Mike,
were.
Yep, Mike, good to have you tonight. His two hosts and Kathleen Bowie, who has been on almost since the beginning of JPEG to Raw, I think, and who adds what I call real life and spunk to the show. Kathleen, how are you doing?
Thank you. I love being on the JPEG to Raw show. I actually wasn't there at the very beginning. It was a few shows in, but I started off as a guest, and then they got me hooked about talking about photography every week with other people who cared. Yeah. So that's why I stuck around.
How long have you been snapping pictures and selling them to people?
I've been shooting for about 12 years, and I would say I've always been charging, but not what I should be. So there
That's real common, right, for photographers. They get started. This is I hear this theme when I listen to you guys on JPEG to Raw. I hear this theme of new photographers come in, and they always undercharge for what they should be doing. Is that right?
It's very, very common, and you don't know until you know. And I think that most people eventually hit a wall of working their little fingers to the bone and then realizing they're making $1.50 an hour or sometimes nothing an hour, and so something's got to give.
Can I give a little background on how Kathleen and I became to work together?
Yeah, do that.
So I was searching for photographers in my area and getting some ideas of what to shoot, and I come across photo after photo and thought, I don't like that one, or that one's okay. And then I came across this page where generally I don't like music on a page, but for whatever reason, I love the music that was on this page, and the photos were absolutely gorgeous. And this is kind of outside of what I normally would do. I said, you know what, I don't know who this photographer is. I'm going to send her an email and just say, awesome, I love your work. And she emailed me back, and then we kind of emailed back and forth a little bit ever since then. And then when I thought about doing the show, I really wanted her to be co-host. But yet I wasn't ready to ask her that because the show was I was still learning.
Right.
I didn't want to have her come on. Then finally, I think show number 14, we had her come on, and from there I tricked her, which is going to be a theme whenever we get to Tim here. I tricked her into being a co-host, nice. And she's been on the show ever since show number 14.
Kathleen, where do we find your work?
www.kathleenbowiephotography.com. And then, of course, on Facebook, you can just search for Kathleen Bowie Photography as well.
And do you have a Twitter account that you follow?
No, I don't tweet.
You don't tweet. All right, that'll change someday. That will change.
Okay, it'll change.
Well, great having you on. And the other co-host over there, of course, is Tim Kemperly. And Tim's actually a Windows home server guy with us, came out of the home server show community and joined Mike on JPEG to Rock. Tim, how are you doing this evening?
Very good, Jim. How are you?
Good, and you don't have to do show notes tonight. That's always good. Mike somehow roped you in to doing show notes on your show.
Yes, he did get me early on.
Yeah.
And so since I gave the background on Kathleen, let me give the background on Tim. So when I was starting off, I was looking for guests, and Tim had some good photos out there. I said, hey, Tim, why don't you come on show number 4, my first the first JPEG to Raw video show. Prior to that, we were only, audio only. So Tim came on the first show. We had a great pre-show and post-show discussion that actually we put out as a separate show. And then I think I had him come on like show number 6. I think there was one show skip. And then I was having him come on every week after that. And eventually I said, Tim, why don't we just officially say you're co-host now?
Nice.
And I kind of eased them into it and tricked them to become co-host.
Well, that's good. Well,
when he first asked me, I'm like, God, I got to go out and get a video camera now. I don't have a webcam. I got nothing.
Well, Tim, I've actually gotten to know you through JPEG to Raw as opposed to the home server show community. So it's kind of funny how that's kind of spun out, and I didn't know you very well before then, but I've gotten to know you through this. So, guys, great having you on. Let's get right to business because we've spent a few minutes introducing everyone. I feel like that's important because people watch these shows and they want some context around them. So. But let's talk cameras, guys. And you guys all pinged me and said early on, hey, what do you want to talk about? And I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I want to ask the question. I got to ask the question. I got 8 megapixels on this camera that's right here, right? I mean, it even says it right there. You can see 8 megapixels. That's a pretty rocking camera, right? What's wrong with me? I mean, shouldn't these take pretty good photos for me that I can just – I mean, it's why doesn't that work for me? Why doesn't – Or if it does, I mean, what's the advantage of having a more expensive camera or stuff over your typical camera phone.
If you don't mind, Kathleen, I'll start.
You go for it.
You know, I think one of these can take good pictures. You know, the best camera is the one that you have with you, is a saying, and they can take good photos, but they are limited. You know, this is actually a large phone. So this is 8 megapixel. This is a point and shoot that is also 8 megapixels, and I don't have a third hand, so I'm going to let something go here. An SLR. So you can see it's a lot different, a lot bigger. The bigger cameras, like the SLRs, have a much larger sensor inside of them. And even though the megapixels may not be that much different, you know, that one, the big one I picked up is 12, where this is 8. The megapixels are not that much more, 8 versus 12, but the sensor size is much, much larger. And that does several things. One, it helps you with what we call digital noise, and that's if you ever take a photo with your cell phone camera and inside, let's say, where there's not a lot of light, and you get it, and it's kind of got a lot of I don't know how to describe this, but noise, a lot of pixels in it.
Pixelation,
it
just looks, or yeah, dust looking.
Yeah, that's a good example. Good thing is dust looking. That's because that sensor it can't resolve in low light. It's boosting the sensor signal, what's called ISO, and it's causing a lot of noise. The bigger cameras will do much better with that. The other thing that they do is something we'll get into in a little bit probably, is depth of field. These things are great for taking landscape-type photos where you have the things close to you and the things far away in focus. But if you want to take more of a portrait photo, you want to take a picture of your kid and you want the things behind them blurred out and have that nice, smooth, blurred background, even the point-and-shoots won't do that good with that. You need an SLR with a good lens.
The thing that I liken cell phone pictures or little point-and-shoot cameras to is kind of like your microwave in your kitchen. You can cook food in your microwave, but it's not always going to be great. And it's simple because you put it in and you put 2 or 3 minutes and you hit start and it's ready for you and you eat it. But the chicken's always kind of tough. Yeah. It's always kind of rubbery. And so you're never going to get a fantastic meal with your microwave. You're going to have to move up and learn how to actually cook before you can get a really good meal.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at your point and shoot and saying, I don't understand, I just spent $600 on this and I can't understand why it's not giving me pictures like the photographer down the street who charges, you know, $1,000 for a photo shoot. Well, it's because aside from talent and the investment of time learning how to use the equipment, you're not going to get a great meal with a microwave.
So if I'm a guy – oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, that's a good analogy. Very good.
If I'm a guy – so I've been taking some pictures with my phone, and I'm thinking, I want to get into photography, and I hear this all the time. And so I'm going to go out and buy a camera. And there's a million of them out there. Tell me – and I know – I think there's a rivalry between – two different kinds of cameras. I think that's
three different cameras.
Three different. Okay. All right. So Tim, what are the three different kinds of cameras that are out there? Just what?
Well,
are the
best one out there right now is Sony.
Okay, so Sony and then
Canon and Nikon.
All right. So those are the three big ones. And yeah. Say I'm your average guy, and I want to take some better pictures than I'm getting off my camera. What? Give me some tips on what I should look for in a digital SLR and. What kind of price range should I expect to pay? And you can give me a range on that, but what should I expect to pay to just take some decent pictures that I might be able to edit and make better than just what I'm getting off my phone? But I don't want to do it as a pro.
Yeah, if I can hit the brand thing first, is like Tim said, Sony, Canon, Nikon, not in that order. It's just I would suggest going and holding all three and feeling – seeing which one you like the best.
And Mike, do I need to go to a camera store, or I'm going to be intimidated by the?
You can probably go to Best Buy.
Okay, so Best Buy would have those available for me.
Yeah, in this case, if you're just starting off, you're not starting with a high end. The camera I just showed is the professional line of Nikon. You're probably not going to find it at Best Buy, but you're not going to be wanting to spend what you're going to spend on one of these. So I think one thing, you go hold them and see which one feels better to you. Fool with the controls, which one the controls feel more natural to you. The other factor, I think, and Tim, Kathleen, you have their opinion, is do you have a friend who has a brand already that would let you borrow some of their lenses? Because if you have a friend who will let you borrow lenses, what you'll find as you get into photography, the camera is one investment. But the big investment over time is the lenses. You will spend more money on the lenses, but they will last longer for you, and they're very important because unlike your cell phone, a SLR, digital SLR, does not come with a lens built into it. You've got to buy separate lenses for it, and that's both a plus and a minus. So I say if you have a friend that has something, that's probably the brand you want to go with, or otherwise go and feel them and play with them.
Right, and not only can you go to Best Buy, you can go to Target, any store that has it on a display where you can actually pick it up, because you're going to want to hold it in your hand. It's definitely a heavier camera. You got to be aware of it, that you're going to, it's going to weigh you down. That's why you always have your cell phone with you, and it's great to take a picture with that. But if you're going on vacation, you're not going to want to be there with a cell phone, or I've seen people out there with iPads, which just looks kind of goofy. But you're going to get your better pictures from a camera. And I would think now the point-and-shoot type camera is probably going to start disappearing. The camera phone is probably going to take the place of a point-and-shoot, and then the next bridge is going to be people going with a DSLR.
Exactly. And as far as price is concerned, of what you can expect, you know, if you're just wanting to start out, you want to get your first DSLR, which, by the way, DSLR stands for digital single lens reflex is what it stands for. Anyways, I would say $1,000 to $500 if you can get one used. You think that's about right, Mike?
Yeah, I think you can find one for in the $600 to $700 range, maybe as low as $500, and it will come with a kit lens.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say $600 to $1,000.
Can I buy one on Craigslist? And kind of, is this something that I can do on Craigslist and maybe find a deal out there, somebody who's bought one?
I say yes. Every professional camera I've purchased, except for my recent purchase, has been a used camera on eBay. You just have to make sure that who you're buying it from has excellent ratings.
Correct. I've done that as well.
Make sure that you're very careful about reading the description, so you make sure that you are buying the camera and not a coffee mug.
Yeah, and I bought mine from Adorama, which is an online reseller, one of the ones I like, as used from them, from Nikon refurbished. The thing to be careful about there, if you live in the U.S., is that you are buying a U.S. warrantied camera and not what they call gray market. There's some cameras where they'll bring in a foreign camera into the U.S., and I guess Nikon's made overseas, but you know it's one meant for sale overseas, and it's called gray market. You'll get a better deal on it, but it is not warranted in the U.S. Nikon, Canon, I don't know about Sony, but Nikon, Canon will not even work on it, even if you tried to pay
them. Yeah, none of them manufacturers will. And I'm lucky. I live in New York, so I buy all my camera equipment from B&H Photo. And the reason I do it is because I know I'm getting a USA warranty, because God forbid something goes wrong, you will not be able to get that camera fixed here. Even if you want to pay them, they won't touch it. And it's the same exact camera, but they won't even look at it.
By the way, B&H is a great place to buy a Drobo, too. They're always the cheapest. If you're going to buy it online, B&H Photo, for whatever reason, is always one of the cheaper places to buy a Drobo. So if you're out there, we've talked a lot about that, but if you're out there doing that. Christian, Mike, one sec. Let me throw it over to Christian real quick. Christian, what I know you do some amateur photography. What do you have? Are you taking it on a cell phone at this point? Or you got some kind of camera that you're – what are you using?
I mean, if I'm just looking to take a shot for the sake of taking a shot, I mean, I'll pull out a phone. But I do actually carry – let me see if I can – I do take this on a – I mean, it's a pretty decent camera. It's nothing compared to what you photo gurus are using. But it's got a – I can never pronounce it right, but it's a Schneider. I think it's a Schneider. Schneider. It's a German. Cool. It's a German lens.
German lens
on Samsung, and it actually is a pretty nice camera. It takes a really nice shot.
Yeah.
12 megapixel resolution. It's got and it's really a nice optical zoom. It's got 10x zoom, and it's a 4.2 to 42 millimeter lens, and with a 24 millimeter ultra wide dual IS. So I'm not really sure what the specifics are.
IS is image stabilization.
So
can I point on one thing that Christian said?
You can see that lens comes out pretty far, and it really does work well. So
Christian brought up a good point when he said 10x optical zoom, I believe you said. And a lot of times with point-and-shoots, you have optical zoom and digital zoom. I would tell you, you know, digital zoom is useless. Do not
disable
use that.
It. Disable the digital zoom.
And only use the optical zoom. If you really want to digital zoom, you can do that later on your computer where you just what's called cropping it. You know, that's all that's happening in your camera with digital zoom is it's cropping the image. And you can, you know, with my cell phone, I can zoom in. It's not really zooming in. It's just cropping it to a much lower quality photo.
I do have to interject and say, back to my microwave analogy here, that just because you buy a DSLR doesn't mean that you've taken your photos out of the microwave. You have to learn to get your DSLR and put it in manual mode or one of the manual modes before you're actually putting effort forth to the photo. And it makes a difference still. You can grab a DSLR and keep it in auto, and you're still not 100% of the time going to get the kind of images that you're looking for if you want something better or different than a microwave meal.
Right. So, Kathleen, for in Christian's sake, he's taken pictures with a step up from a phone, but definitely not a full-fledged, you know, there's no, it's all, most of his phone's automatic, right? There's very little manual to it. Are his photos editable in some of the Photoshop, Lightroom? Can you do some things to it and get a pretty good picture out of it? Can you do some things that you would normally do with a digital, with an SLR? Is it a good middle ground? And Tim, you said those kinds of things are going away. Are those the kind of cameras that are going to be replaced by camera phones, or is that market going to stay where it might be a little more, you know, a little better of a camera?
I think you can definitely do some processing. But
you can do processing with anything. You can do processing with a camera phone.
But is it worth it is the question. Certainly I can do the processing, but there's not – with my camera phone, there's probably not a lot there for me to work with. Well, is there going to be any more for me to work with than a phone like –
You're going to be shooting JPEG with that thing, so that's one problem.
Okay.
So well, I think the good thing about it is it's got a variable focal length, which is going to help you so you can get a wide-angle picture or a small telephoto-type picture, which with your camera phone you're not going to be able to get. I think that's just going to be digitally cropping out the picture in a camera phone because the lens is a fixed size. That would be the big difference with it. So it is a little bit of a step up over a camera phone at this point.
Okay.
Well, and I also think there's something called lag time when you're talking about the little point-and-shoot cameras and, well, really with any camera. And that's the time – this is what a lot of moms complain about because they say that their camera's not fast enough to catch their kids. And so the lag time is the time between pressing the shutter with your finger and the camera actually snapping the picture. And so the lag time on your smartphone is going to be longer than it is on a phone like Christian has. And the phone that Christian has is going to be much longer than one of our DSLR cameras.
Christian, how long does it take by the time you press your picture to the point it actually takes it?
This camera is kind of weird with that. It actually takes a couple seconds for it actually to – it does a couple seconds of weirdness before I can get a shot.
Right. So if you're trying to take a picture of somebody playing baseball or something swinging the bat, you're going to miss it every time.
Right. Exactly.
But that's kind of normal with a point-and-shoot, though.
Yeah, it's very typical.
Unless you press halfway down on the shutter, kind of compose it, and then you can press it.
Yeah, unless you get that green box to come up and be focused and ready before the shot's coming in, and then you...
Mm-hmm. Mike, I know you got
that's very typical with the point-and-shoot cameras, and I tell a lot of people who are looking for a point-and-shoot to find out what the lag time is.
Is that something that's advertised? I mean, will they say, you know, 1.2 seconds to shot or?
You have to look for it. Okay. It's not something that's out there. You have
to look
for it.
Yeah, they won't post that out there. If they're posting it, it's because it's pretty quick.
You know, a place where you can go and do some good camera reviews, and I know for SLRs, I'm not positive, digital SLRs, I'm not positive about point and shoots, but if you're looking at getting a digital SLR, a great place to go and do look at reviews is dpreview.com.
Yeah, that's a great site, and they do have point and shoots as well.
Yeah, so they would have the specs. They do detailed specs on every camera. So if you looked at Christian's camera or any camera you're thinking about getting other than like a cell phone, it'll have all those specs for you.
What's and it'll, you know, it'll compare it to other models as well. So you might say to yourself, I'm looking for one type. Well, the comparison to this camera is X, Y, and Z, so now you can compare it to those as well in the same price range.
So if I'm out comparing cameras and I'm expecting – so I'm going to buy a used one off eBay or Craigslist or something like that. What kind of discount should I expect to get off list price or you know, B&H price or whatever you want to say? What generally – I mean, should I expect a 20% discount, a 40% discount? Do they go down in price quickly? Do they hold their prices? And let's just talk about those out of the three big ones, right? What do you guys think?
I think it depends upon how many generations old it is.
Okay.
How many new cameras come out in front of it, how old and beat up the camera itself is. So one of the things you want to know is how many shutter clicks have been on that camera. Because in a SLR, except for Tim's. Tim's is a little bit different, but in Kathleen's eye, there's actually a mirror that flips up when every time you take a picture. That mirror is mechanical and has a life to it. And different cameras are rated for different things. I think mine are rated for like 300,000 or something like that. So you got to think, if you've taken 100,000 shots, if that camera's taken 100,000, it's a third of the way through its life.
Somebody just knocked on the door, right?
Yeah. It's a third of the way through its life. So right there, it should be at least a third of the two-thirds of the original price. And then you got to look at whether it is has any wear and tear marks on it.
Okay. Or is it three generations old? That's going to be
that's another factor.
Because cameras change. It's not like when you had film cameras where you could have the camera for 10 years and it's probably not going to change a lot. A digital camera from a manufacturer, you probably got to figure every 2 years they're changing that model.
So let me give you an example. This one here is a Nikon D2X, 12 megapixels. It was Nikon's top of the line when I bought it. And I bought it used. It was, I think, new. It was $5,000. I bought it for $3,000. And that was back, I think, probably in 2006 or 7, and I could probably sell it now for less than $1,000.
Okay. So time matters on those as well.
It does.
Hey, while you have that in your hand, just rip off my favorite sound in the whole world. Just get that ready. Just rip a few. Okay, he'll have to get that ready. Kathleen, what kind of camera do you have?
Right now I'm shooting with the Canon. It's the 5D Mark III. It's considered the semi-pro line or the amateur line, but a lot of pros use it. It's a great price point, and it has so many wonderful features to it. I actually just got it a few days ago.
Okay. I ripped them off. I don't know if you heard me, though.
You know what? I'm sorry. I got interrupted from behind. Do that for me one more time.
I got to do it again.
Yeah, one more time. Yeah, that's what I like.
All right, Mike, I'm going to have to put you a little to shame.
Oh, yeah,
he's ready?
Listen to that. Now, I don't know what it is about that sound, but it's just, I don't know if it's because it's the flash and glamour of Hollywood or what, but it's the best sound in the world.
So, you know, my camera shoots at 12 frames a second. I don't think I've ever done it.
Tim's is way faster. I think mine tops out at 7 or 8. So Tim's is way faster. And his does
Tim
not
just
have...
just brought a gun to a knife fight right there.
His does not have a shutter that moves up and down, though.
Right, mine's now, somebody asked a question earlier talking about mirrorless cameras, which are probably going to wind up being the wave of the future. My camera no longer has a mirror in there. So the benefits for my camera is it's got true live focusing now. What the camera does, it takes the picture, what you see through the lens. Instead of it sending it on a mirror up to the prism up top, it's sending it into the sensor, and then also a fraction of the light is going into the camera. In my eyepiece is actually a little video screen. So now the camera will continue to focus regardless of when I'm shooting. Where like Canon and Nikon have the live view on the back, it will not focus if the mirror is up.
Yeah,
so there's a little difference between the two. Plus my camera has an image sensor that will vibrate to prevent shaking in the picture, where Mike and Kathleen's cameras have to have it in the lens.
Yeah, so what Tim's talking about there is what was called vibration reduction for Nikon and image stabilization for Canon. For us, we've got to have, your point and shoot. I think Christian said something about his has IS. Mm-hmm. We have, Kathleen and I, for our digital SLRs, have to have that built into the lens. Like this is my 70-200. If you can see that. It has to be built into this lens for it to work. Tim's case with the Sony, it is built into the sensor, so everything he shoots with is image stabilization.
Holy moly. Christian, you got any questions?
I think
how do you recommend people start investing and working their way up in the lens field, because there's so many different lenses that you can get once you get the base camera itself and once you start getting into the high quality photos. My question is for the average guy, when do you tell them to stop where they really don't need the camera with the lens that's the same width as their 24-inch monitor?
I think that before lenses comes knowledge of correct exposure and using your camera and manual. As with anything, you don't know what you're missing until you know that you're missing it. And so I don't think anyone should be making purchases with any kind of equipment until they've come to know the equipment they have and then realize that because of their equipment, they're being held back in their creativeness. And then that's when you move forward. So, for example, my first camera was an entry-level DSLR. It was the Canon Rebel, and I had what's called a kit lens, just because it comes with the kit, and that was fine for me for many years until I started saying, man, I shoot people, and I really want to make the person stand out and be the single focus in the picture. How do I do that? So then I learned how to do that with the functions of my camera and then realized that even now that I knew the function of my camera, I still couldn't do it because I didn't have the correct lens to do it with. And so then that's when I upgraded to my first lens. I bought the kind of lens that I knew would be able to give me that blurred background, which is called your bokeh or a great shallow depth of field.
And I'd like to add one thing to Kathleen. So what Kathleen said, the kit lens generally comes is a zoom lens Christian has on his point and shoot. It'll be a little bit wide, not really wide on the wide end, and a little bit telephoto. So a good walking around lens. It won't like pick up your soccer player on the other end of the field. You'll need something bigger for that. And it won't take, you know, really wide landscapes, but it'll be a good general purpose lens. The one lens I would say to add to that initial purchase is one of the cheapest lenses you can buy, but one of the best quality for that cheap price, and that is the Canon or Nikon, and I think Sony has one too, the 50mm f1.8.
Or 1.4.
I'd say 1.8 because it's so cheap, is what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. It's under $75.
To start off, for Nikon, it's around $100. I think Canon's around $100. Sony, you're saying, is around $75.
$75,
$80,
you can find
it. Of all the lens, there's no lens you can go out there and spend $100 on and get that kind of quality. Mm-hmm. And it will also help you learn as you get a little bit better along is learn that depth of field. It'll teach you the depth of field better than that point and shoot will. And at $100, there's not much you can go wrong there.
Right.
So I see we're showing a lot of Kathleen's great photos. I sent Jim what not to do with your camera.
Yeah, so let's come back to that.
This is
going to
look pretty
quick,
bad when we go to mine.
Well, that'll really emphasize where you can go wrong. But Kathleen, talk a little bit about these photos as you took them, maybe a little bit mechanically, and then maybe a little artistically as well. I mean, you do a lot of baby photography in your work that you do. And what are you looking for, and kind of what draws you to this? Just talk a little bit about these.
Well, I think that being a photographer is one thing, and then being a fine art photographer is something different. And I strive to be a fine art photographer. I strive to give my clients something that they can hang on their walls and is never going to look like anything other than artwork, no matter how old their children get. And I think that with anything that we learn to do, like the photography for me, the mechanical part of it is just one half of my job. The other half, since I shoot newborns, is obviously learning how to pose them. If someone shoots models, they have to learn how to speak to their models to know how to pose them and which angles look right on them. So my job is no different in knowing both sides of the camera. As far as technically goes, I love the 50mm 1.4 lens. That's the lens I use on all of the shots that you see here. I'm not sure what else you guys want to know.
Well, talk a little bit about, you're going into a photo shoot, and what are just some of the basics of, and what do you do with the customer, and how do you get ideas to do this kind of stuff? If somebody was just starting to do this, you know, I'm the idiot who puts somebody in front of a tree and takes a picture, and we'll get a few of those here when we look at Mike's pictures, but
I sent you ones of what not to do.
No, I'm just kidding.
I do take some good ones every now and then.
But Kathleen, as you're going in for this art, how do you, certainly it didn't look like this when you took the picture. How do you set it up, and then what kind of stuff do you do to kind of finish the picture, so to speak, at a high level?
Okay, well, this specific shot that we're looking at, I have this baby on a really large beanbag because it's comfortable. And actually, the fur that you see them on is a rug that I bought from TJ Maxx. that's never been used for anything else but photo shoots. And so you just get the baby comfortable. For newborns, I keep them in a really warm, warm room. It's like 80 to 85 degrees to keep them sleepy. I usually have like a white noisemaker running in the background because it helps to lull them to sleep. And I never try and shoot a newborn that's over 10 days old. Once they're past the 10-day mark, they're not considered newborns for me anymore.
Wow.
Because they just don't sleep as easily.
Right.
And also the best way to photograph newborns is when they have a full belly. So just make sure that they're really fed well. And then as far as technically with this shot, so I'm obviously in front of the baby, and then behind me a little bit to the right is where the big giant window was. So as you can see on the baby's forehead, that's where you see the majority of the light, and it kind of falls off as you go down by the baby's feet. So lighting your subject well is going to change your pictures dramatically. In fact, photography really is the art of painting with light. So yep. Learning how to see light through your camera, knowing where it's falling, knowing how to model your subjects with the light is really important in good photography.
You know, light is the absolute key to photography. It's like Kathleen said, painting with light. I would like to point out one thing with the inference that Kathleen does. She does, you know, this is really on the pro side of what it is. It takes a lot of skill and practice to get where she is. There's also things going on that you don't see. You see sometimes these infants that look like they're in these dangerous situations. Some of them are actually in dangerous situations, but a professional like Kathleen is doing something that you don't see when with the final product, is that she's taking multiple images and blend them together in one final product. And in each image, there's the mom or the dad or someone else that's making sure that baby is safe. So don't go hanging a baby from a tree and thinking that's what the person really did.
Kathleen, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I've been very careful that when I post my work on Facebook recently, if it's a composite, which is what it's called when you take multiple images and blend them into one, that I say it's a composite and, you know, I've been doing this for a long time and so don't try this at home by yourself, basically.
Okay.
How much gotta keep those babies safe.
Right. And this, trust me, I will never try this at home, but okay. I'll mow the lawn all day. Don't ask me to take pictures of babies.
Okay.
in this photo that we're looking at right here, any color enhancements to it? I mean, it looks so rich and so, the tones are just so fabulous in this picture. Any after stuff that you did to it to kind of clean it up?
Well, I go in and of course I remove any kind of blemishes or anything from the baby or from the mom. But what's making it so rich and the color so creamy is white balance. Getting it right in your camera is so important. And what white balance is that all light has a color to it. And so in this case, this picture was taken in this lady's bedroom. And she had very yellow lights in her bedroom. And so I white balanced in my camera to counteract the yellow in the lights to make it look more with the natural skin tones. Mm. And then in post-processing, you know, I probably upped the contrast a little bit to kind of bring out the dark in her eyelashes and to give the photo a little bit more punch. But other than that, if you can get your white balance and your exposure correct in camera, then the post-processing can be extremely minimal, which is always my goal. I don't want to spend all day in front of my computer trying to edit pictures.
That's absolutely key, is getting it right in camera. And we've touched on something here that comes back to our name, JPEG and RAW. And if you were shooting with RAW with a DSLR, you were going to have to really post-process to some degree every single image. The difference between JPEG, which is what you're going to get out of your phone, what you're probably going to get out of your point-and-shoot, this one does take RAW, but you'll get out of your point-and-shoot, is all those settings, white balance, you know, color adjustments, whatever, all those different settings you've done, the camera will bake them in, will calculate them, create a file that has all that data baked into the image, and then compress the image and throw away a bunch of data. So you've taken like a 20 meg file and compressed it all the way down to 3. And that is losing data. With a RAW image, it has got those settings you took in a sidecar file, and it's the RAW data from the image, from the sensor, and it's not impacting that image, and it's not compressed in most cases, so you have full quality. But the downside is requires some post-processing.
Uh-huh. And do you do any blemish correction? Not on that picture, but typically do you do blemish? If someone has a blemish in their skin, do you correct that for them?
Definitely. I do have, when I send my clients their images, like obvious blemishes, like, you know, pimples or something, I'll go ahead and remove right away. But sometimes clients will come with like a noticeable birthmark of some sort that you're not sure if it's a blemish or not. And so I've just put in my contract that if they want it removed, to let me know. Otherwise, we will leave it right where God put it. That way there's no question.
I've gone as far, like I shoot for our high school swim team. And there's a lot of kids, those high school kids have a lot of acne. I've gone as far as removing their acne. So their parents come back, I don't know what you did, but these photos look just awesome.
Like, well, yeah, dermatologist.
You're not actually going in there and you have to correct every single one. Does the software, Photoshop, or whatever you use, does that kind of have some tones?
No, it's manual.
Okay.
No, so, you go in and you move every single one. So when someone does that for you, if your photographer is doing that for you, especially for your pimply teenage child, that is a huge undertaking. So thank them.
And it's from, you know, Mike, I've noticed that you guys are getting more into this is the senior season. Right, when seniors are having their portraits taken. Is that real common in senior portraits? I mean, is it a little bit extra because you got to take all that stuff out?
I don't charge extra for it. You just do it. I mean, for me, it's, you know, it helps them feel better about themselves, and they're ultimately going to like their pictures better if they don't see it. So,
hey, so there's a question out in chat. Says, if you get it right in camera, do you still suggest shooting in RAW? Yeah, I only shoot in RAW. And while we're going to show some of these here where I got them wrong, you know, that's why I'm showing these on purpose. I still shoot in, and I don't always get them wrong, but I shoot in RAW because I want that extra information. You never know when you're going to need it. I have had a time when I went out and had the wrong white balance dyed onto my camera and shot an entire soccer game and came back, and the entire game was blue tinted because I had the wrong white balance. But because I shot in RAW, it was a very easy and quick adjustment. I was able to adjust all 500 photos within seconds.
But you don't have to shoot in RAW.
You don't have to.
It's the safer way to fly, for sure.
I know some professionals who shoot in JPEG, but there's no right or wrong. It's just what I want to do.
Just what you're most comfortable with. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about problems, because every amateur photographer gets out there, they start shooting pictures, and they run into this, right? Which is, in this case, like Kathleen, you were saying, the light is painted on the car and not the person at this point, right? I mean, Mike, this is your photo.
Yep.
What don't you like about it?
You know, right after a baseball game, my son, this is a number of years back, and I'm taking a picture of him. Right behind him is my white truck that is very bright, and the camera exposed for the bright white behind him and not for him. So if I would instead make sure my exposure was set for him, he would have been exposed, and most likely that truck would have been just complete white, because the camera, and somewhat like our eyes, but our eyes have a really wide, what we call dynamic range, where we can see from dark to light really well. And the human eye, the difference between the back of that truck and my kid's face, our human eye has no trouble distinguishing that. The camera can't see that bright and that dark all at one time. So what would have probably been better is if I'd have moved him so I didn't have that big, bright, white background behind
him. That reflective, license plate.
Yes.
Or fill flash.
Yeah. Or, yes, you can turn your flash on. Now, so this is my other son. So we're going through bad examples here.
This is bad. This is good. No, this is no reflection on
you. I thought you tried to do that.
Well, so there's different types of blur. There's blur because you moved. There's blur because you misfocused. And there's blur because you don't have enough shutter speed, and the person is moving. This is a case where it's just complete misfocus. It's not me moving. It's not the kid moving. It's just complete misfocus, and that's what I was just wanting to show there. If you get something like that, you're going to get some of those. You're going to get some of those because the camera just picked up something and focused somewhere wrong. So we can go on to the next one.
Do you guys – is it – certainly you're not auto-focusing at this point, right, when you're taking pictures. It's all manual?
I generally auto-focus. No.
I autofocus as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It's good to know. Mike, this what's wrong with this one? This looks pretty good. This looks like a picture I'd take.
Yeah, so there's nothing really that wrong with it. This is my two boys and our dog a number of years ago. But look at his hand above the dog's head.
Ah, I see.
You see there's a blur to that. And this is where the shutter's not fast enough to stop the action. So you got a number of things going on. You got to, when you're holding the camera, you have to have enough shutter because you're not holding it perfectly still. You're moving a slight amount. Different people move different ways. You know, some people can hold really steady. Some people have to can't hold quite as steady. The typical rule is that you want 1 times your focal length. So if you look at this big camera, this big lens I held up, it can go all the way up to 200 millimeters. That's how far it can zoom in. You want, what did I say, 1 times? I think you generally want 1.5 times, right, Kathleen? So you want to shut.
So if this I do 2 times to be safe.
And I do 2 times too. So let's just say 2 times. That'll make the math easier.
Yeah.
With this 200 millimeter lens, and that's on the zoom side of it, I would want a shutter speed of no less than 1/400th in order to stop my movement of myself. But whenever we're looking at people moving, you need a shutter speed fast enough to stop their movement. This is an example where I didn't have enough shutter speed to stop their movement. And you can see it in his hand is blurry.
If you guys, go ahead, Kathy.
I'm sorry, you go ahead, Jim.
No, you're great. You go.
Okay. This is your show. I was going to say, so basically, getting correct exposure is based off of 3 things in your camera: ISO, shutter speed, and your aperture. Your ISO is basically back to the film days when you used to have to go and purchase your film from the counter, and you know they said, "Oh, you can buy 100 speed film, and that's good for the shade." Or you're going to a party where it's going to be dark, get the 400 speed film to be safe. So you'd grab the 400 speed film. ISO is basically the same thing, where the higher the number, the better off you're going to be in low light situations, and the lower the number, the better off you're going to be in nice, even light, shady situations. There goes my dog again. Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
And the ISO,
mute your mic, Kathleen. Just
the
mute
ISO
for you.
Can be thought of as like the gain on the sensor. The sensor is amping up its gain so it picks up more light. I'm going to try this. Well, you've shown that image of that. And that's another example of the kid's moving, and you can see right. The blur in him. The dog is staying fairly still. So I have enough shutter speed that I'm able to stop the dog, and I'm not picking up my own movement, but he is moving. And the one thing you got to do sometimes is stop yourself and find out, what did I do here? And that's why you want to get out of auto mode, because the camera's making all the decisions for you. You want to say, what did I do here? Because you typically have a tendency to, I'm just going to take a bunch of photos. I don't know why they keep coming out bad, but if I just take a bunch of them.
I'll get lucky, even a blind squirrel gets a nut every once in a while. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's not the best approach. You know, in this case, I could just keep taking and keep taking and keep taking, and I'm going to keep getting the same result. But if I stop myself and say, oh, the problem is I don't have enough shutter speed to stop the action.
So aperture and shutter speed, I kind of liken it to your eye. Where your eyelid is like your shutter speed. So when you hear the camera go click, click, imagine your eyelid opening and shutting. And however fast that goes or however slow that goes is your shutter speed. And aperture is kind of like the iris in your eye, where when you walk into a dark room, your iris instinctively knows to open up wider to let in the most light possible so you can see. And when you walk into the bright sun, your iris instinctively knows to close up so you're not blinded by the sun. So if you look at your shutter speed and aperture that way, then when you are in a dark room, you will obviously need to open up your aperture to allow the light to come in. And if you're in a really light situation, you don't necessarily need the aperture to be that wide.
Can you switch to showing me, Jim?
Yeah. Hold on. 1 sec here. All right, you're up.
Okay. Can you see the lens I got shining here?
Yep.
So what Kathleen's talking about, the iris opening up, this is an actual lens. And as I turn this, you're going to be able to see the inside of it get bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You see how that happened?
Sure.
That's what's happening with the with the f-stop or the aperture.
So just as a recap, ISO kind of captures the movement or the
sensitivity of
sensitivity
the
right to it. So it heightens, the higher it is, the higher it's heightened. Shutter speed is how much of that action do I want to catch. So the longer I leave it open, the more action I'm catching. The shorter, the less action. And then the aperture is how much light am I bringing into the camera? Is it low light? If it's low light, I need that higher. If it's high light, I need it lower. Is that right?
Correct. And the what aperture will also do for you is if you have it wide open where when Mike had it and you see the big hole in the back, you're going to have a very short amount of area that's going to be in focus. So if you're trying to take a landscape scenery, you want to have it with a small aperture setting, which will be a higher number, which is kind of counterintuitive. Sure. But if you're taking a portrait, you want to have it wide open so that everything behind the person is going to be out of focus.
I have some examples of that. So this example we have right up now is I actually had the camera on a tripod because it is about a 4 second. The shutter is open for 4 seconds. There's no way you can handhold that and have it steady. So the shutter is open for 4 seconds to get him drawn with his, what do you call those?
Sparklers.
Mm-hmm. Sparklers. And the reason you can see him is because at the end of the shutter, I manually hit the flash to expose him.
So that's at the end of the shot. So open, dark, 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 flash goes to expose him, and then that gets your picture.
This is a little bit more advanced, but yeah, so what's happening is while I have the shutter open for those 4 seconds, the only light it's seeing is a sparkler. So it doesn't see anything else. Nothing else is bright enough for it to catch. But right. Then when I pop the flash really quick, it picks him up. So I'm actually getting both of those exposures in one shot.
And because the sparkler's brighter than the flash, it doesn't overexpose and you lose the sparkler in that case, right? The sparkler's brighter as it's opened and up. It's brighter than the flash is going to be when it goes off.
Right? Well, it's almost like it's a movie. It's got the first part of the frame where there's no flash and the last part where there is a flash. And that is almost like a movie, but down into one shot.
Okay.
So it's like two exposures in one shot.
When you're talking about aperture and shutter speed and ISO, it's kind of like they are all each the yin and the yang to each other. They work in tandem. And so you have to give on one to get something else. And so, like, for example, with this picture that Mike is showing right here, his shutter speed was of the utmost importance because he wanted to get that sparkler. And so that was where his focus was. And so then his aperture came in secondhand. If you're shooting a portrait, singling out your subject and having that nice blur in the background is going to be your focus. So aperture would be your focus, and then shutter speed would come in second. So it's all learning how they work in tandem together to get the look that you're really going for.
And what about this one,
Mike? I think Kathy mentioned this before, the exposure triangles. Those three things she mentioned, they all impact each other. So in this case, I had a shutter speed that was way too low on a bright day, and it ended up completely overexposing. So what you're going to have if you had the wrong shutter speed or wrong aperture or the wrong ISO, but usually it's the wrong aperture or shutter speed, is you're going to have a way underexposed or way overexposed image. In this case, I have a way overexposed. You can see that some of the areas are just complete white. You can't see anything. And that's what we call blown out. So if you think of a graph, all the way to the left is zero, and all the way to the right is 255. The left is black, and the right is complete white. If you have anything that's completely to the right, which is white, at 255, there's no data there. It's completely lost.
Kathleen, in your shoots, how many pictures do you take before you take pictures to get the right exposure and aperture? And I assume you're testing the room before you actually start taking real pictures. Is that what you do?
Sure. I mean, I started in film, and so I didn't have that luxury. But now that I'm digital, you know, of course, when I started, it was more, and now I can take one shot, see what it is, make my adjustments, and I'm ready to roll. Okay. And sometimes I don't even need to. Sometimes I set my adjustments as to what I think they are before I take the shot, and sometimes they're spot on, just because I've done it for so long that I know in this lighting, in this circumstance, this is probably what I want.
Okay.
Here's what I do. So in this case, in both of these photos we just shown, one way overexposed, one way underexposed. When I got to the soccer field, I would get there early before the game started, and I would take a few photos and then look at them on the back of my camera. And on SLRs are something called the blinkies. And what that is you saw the one before where it was all bright. You can have your SLR set up to where anything that's completely blown out like that, it'll blink for you to show you, oh, you've blown this out. In that case, that was really obvious that I had blown something out. So what you would do is you would look at the back of your camera and go, uh-oh, I've got some setting wrong. And then you go and you fix that and you start taking some more pictures. What you don't want to do is have the first time you check to see your settings is at the end of the game, the end of the shoot. You want to get some feedback. That's the benefit of digital, is that you can get feedback before you go get this stuff developed or process it. You know, now as digital, is get that feedback, see what has gone wrong, and make corrections from there.
Well, and also on DSLR cameras, you also have a meter that you can look at. That's it's like a line of numbers, and if you're dead center, that means your exposure is correct. So you can look at your meter to know if your exposure is correct, and you can also look at the image on the back of your screen. Sometimes if it's a new camera and you don't know what a good image looks like on the back of your camera, it might be hard to know just by looking at the back of your camera. So make sure you learn where your camera's meter is, and it will tell you, yes, technically this is a correctly exposed image.
And I'll tell you, one of the nice things about my new camera, it has the histogram right inside the viewfinder when I'm looking at a picture as I'm taking it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, Jim, there's a web. There's a website I gave, sent you the link to.
Which
SLR,
one? Yeah.
SLR Simulator or Camera Simulator or something like that.
Yeah, Camera
we can
Sim.
We can kind of talk about what Kathleen was just talking about.
Yeah, let me switch over to that for you.
It's a good place to go play with if you are just getting into SLR or want to know a little bit more about it. You see at the bottom of the screen, to the right, to the left, you have 125, then 8, and then you have these little lines. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
Those little lines. Right now there's a line below the list of lines, and that line is showing you where your exposure is. If the line went to the left, switches to manual. There should be a button there that says manual mode.
Okay, I'm switched.
Okay, so now change one of those sliders. Change that slider. Look what just happened. You see that line that's underneath the lines?
Mm-hmm. I saw that move all the way over to the right.
Yep, that's showing you that now you're way overexposed. That little thing there is underneath, is in your viewfinder when you look in the camera. And that will tell you that you are under overexposed. So if you take that thing and go all the way to the left, and then maybe take, yeah, see how now it's too dark.
That's kind of cool.
And you can play with, and you can get a sense for how that thing is. You're going to see something like that in your camera, and you can also see how ISO, aperture, and shutter speed all impact exposure.
So on this screen, I'm having a hard time seeing it.
On the picture, Kathleen, and it'll show it on the main screen.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
In our Hangout.
On the far right, it says ISO is 200,
mm-hmm.
and then the 7.1 is the aperture that they're using, and the 125 is the shutter speed that they're using. So it's also good in your own camera to figure out which numbers stand for what, and to start watching those numbers and see what they're doing as you're moving things around and moving settings around so you can figure out what works.
And in this place, this has a number of things happening. It has the girl moving, has the pinwheel moving, and has a little bit of you moving. As you look at it, you can see a little bit of you moving. There's a link there where you hit the tripod, and it will show you that you stop moving.
Oh, down here. Okay.
Yeah. So now you have stopped moving. And that just shows you that, you know, there's something to be said for...
So if I wanted that to capture that pinwheel and actually see it so it's not blurry, I'm going to get my shutter speed just as fast as I can. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so I'm going to decrease that? Is that what I'm...
Increase
it. So I'm going to take it up. But that's moved my...
These are fractions of a second, so that's why you would want to go up.
So now you're underexposed, so you got to do something. So you want to take your aperture and bring it down.
Okay.
Still a little bit underexposed.
How it came down to 2.8?
Right.
This is where you'd say, I don't own the right kind of lens to get this kind of picture. And you would go buy a lens that could go lower than 2.8.
Yeah, because the lens can only go so low or so high, actually, too. In this case, mm-hmm. you were able to up your ISO to 400 in order to get that the shutter speed, the right exposure.
But what you're telling me is anytime I have all three of these, if one of them is either all the way at the bottom or all the way at the top to make an adjustment right, I probably am not shooting with the correct lens. Is that right, Kathleen? Right. Is that what you're saying?
If you have pushed yourself to the limit on either one and you're not obtaining correct exposure, then you're probably being held back by your lens.
Okay.
And it could not just be the lens. It also could be that you need an external flash of some sort to kind of help stop the movement. So there's a couple of things that could be involved.
Jim, can you put that link out in chat? And I think, Jim, you'll probably have it in your show notes too whenever you do this.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good place to go and play, especially for someone who is – hey, it was fun for me to play with, and I understand a lot about that. But it's fun to play with, and if you're just getting into it, it can be very informative.
Okay, Mike, just so that we know you can take pictures, we'll flip back over to that setting real quick. And now we have a couple that you did take because we showed some really good ones for Kathleen, and let's just show some. So there's –
this one is actually an example I wanted to show of depth of field. You see how his eye, the high eye, or whatever, that right eye, I guess, is in focus. But look at his ear, completely out of focus.
Mm-hmm.
You see that?
Yeah.
That's what is a very, very shallow depth of field. This is my youngest son a few years back. Very, very shallow depth of field. So you have to be careful with this. If you're taking two people, let's say you have two people who are hugging and they're not quite on the same angle, the focus is think of it as a fence. Along that line of the fence is where the focus is. Anybody standing behind or in front of that fence is going to be out of focus. So in this case, if his brother was sitting right behind him, he'd be out of focus.
Same idea with the focus.
This really shows it. You can see the line in this one. You can see the cars in focus, but look how you can see the road goes out of focus.
Well, right? Even the back wing is just out of
focus. Yeah, I was going to say even the spoiler in the back is a little bit out of focus.
Go ahead, Kathy.
When you're selecting your aperture, think if you get, 25 people standing in a line straight in front of you, and each one is holding a card up with one number on it, and the closest one is starting with one, and then the furthest one out has the number 25. So if you set your aperture, which is called your f-stop, at one point something, then the only thing you're going to get in focus is the very first person who's holding that one. If you want to get number 25 in focus, then you need to put your f-stop on closer something to like 25. So when you're picking your aperture for your camera, if you want to get many things in focus, it's a larger number. And if you want to get fewer things in focus, it's a smaller number.
That's a good way to remember it.
This is just another example of shallow depth of field. His face is in focus, behind him is not, and even Old Navy is starting to fade out in focus.
I just love kids this age pictures. They're just the best. Mm-hmm.
Just gives that warm, fuzzy feeling.
They're just dynamite.
This is a photo. That was a photo I don't think you could have taken with a point-and-shoot or a camera phone because he's actually...
Just the feet. Look at the feet. You couldn't do the feet with a point-and-shoot.
And I'm talking about the one before that because he was running straight at me. In a digital SLR, it's fast enough that on the focus that it could actually focus and keep up with him running fat right at me. You can't do that with a camera phone and a point and shoot.
I just got the Google reminder, so make sure you're watching your screens for that.
Okay.
Let's roll through these. We need to give away this Drobo here. Folks have been waiting around for a while, but these are all examples
that's also examples of depth of field. And I don't know if that's Blue Steel or Magnum he's doing there.
That's a look I think I would probably give. Mike, I know, is this an HDR?
This is HDR, but this is an example of the other side of depth of field, where I've got a lot of stuff in focus. I got the grass in front of me and the building way out there. And there's, in addition to the f-stop, is also how wide the lens is. This is a pretty wide lens, and how far you are from the subject. It's somewhat complicated, and I gave you another link that you can put in the show notes that kind of explains some of the depth of field and how, in a landscape photo, you generally want everything in focus.
Okay. One more.
Wait, go back.
Oh, okay, hold on.
Can you talk a bit about, I get this in my shot sometimes, where with the sun, see how there's those dots that are almost like there's something in the lens that's making it? Is that just water?
No, I think in this case what's happening, and maybe Kathleen and Tim can correct me, I think that it's actually the light bouncing around inside of your lens.
Correct, it's light bouncing inside the lens.
It's called lens flare, and basically if you get up really close, it's not an actual circle. It's more like the shape of an octagon, which is what the shape is on the inside of your lens. So if you see that splattered across, all it is the sun is almost hitting your sensor directly, and it's kind of mirroring around on the picture. And it can be used very creatively, like Mike just did in this picture, to add to the image, and sometimes it's like a big splotch in front of your eyeball, and so you have to be careful how you use it. But I love how Mike used it here.
Thank you. It took me 2 hours to take this shot.
Yeah, you probably only get about 10 minutes to get it.
The sun was in that spot for less than a minute.
Yeah.
And then this last one, Mike?
Yeah, this is just another example of getting everything in focus. There's nothing special here.
Okay.
I love that.
Yeah, I do. I like these kinds. And, HDR photography, I think, has gotten super big, huge lately, with a lot of folks doing that. Any just quick tidbits on HDR and things to watch out for? And it's certainly fake photography. I didn't say that, but
it's
fake. It's right. You get these. It is kind of fake, right? I mean, it's
photography is an art.
Yes.
And like Kathleen does composites. HDR is like a composite. It is an art. It is, if you're a a journalist, if you're somebody who's selling stuff to New York Times and you're a photojournalist, you need to be true to what really happened. But if you are a photographer, an artist, there's no limits.
Yeah, sky's the limit.
Yeah, I wouldn't go and say
this was exactly how it was that I saw. I mean, and then you're being this deceitful. But, photography is an art. Now, as far as HDR, my personal opinion, you need a tripod. I don't know if you can see mine. I have one right here. This is my lightweight one. But you need a tripod to put your camera on. And then HDR is generally 3, 5, 7, or 9 images blended together. And so let's talk about 3. That's easy, and we'll get to this real quick. If you're doing a 3-shot HDR image, you have 1 exposed correctly, 1 underexposed, and 1 overexposed. And then you, in software, something like Photomatics, you take those 3 images and blend them together, and then you got to do a little bit more to them after that. And that's how you get what you end up doing there is you're able to do more than what the camera can do as far as getting light and dark exposed properly in the same image.
Mike, did you know that my new camera does HDR in camera?
Yeah, a lot of the point and shoots we do it now. A lot of the digital SLRs are starting to do that HDR in camera. I'm still a firm believer of you do it the right way.
Can you adjust HDR after it's done? I mean, so you take a picture and you process it and you put all the best light and the best exposures in there. Can you adjust that after it's done, or is it pretty much? Does it have RAW and JPEG too?
Well, you're talking about in HDR, does it have RAW? Yeah, I only shoot RAW. So what I do is if I'm shooting 3 and somebody asks how much to over underexpose, I'm usually underexposing or overexposing by 1 stop. So I will shoot, a lot of times I'll shoot 5 shots. So then I'm doing 1 correctly exposed, 1 stop underexposed, 1 2 stop underexposed, and then 1 stop over and 1 stop 1 2 stops over. And what that means by a stop is, when we were turning that dial, a stop is on the camera or the shutter speed or whatever, a stop is considered halving or doubling the light. So 1 stop less light is half of the light you had before.
Half and half and half and half.
Yeah,
and
so
down,
half and so half and half. Little. So what I would do is, in that case, I would have a 1 and 2 stop under, a 1 and 2 stop over, and then 1 that's properly exposed. So 5 images, and then I would blend all those together. Okay. And then you have to do some, it's not as simple as just doing it in Photomatics. You need to bring it back into Photoshop or Lightroom and do some more tweaking from there. But it's a lot of fun.
Very good. I remember when, my first real experience to HDR, I probably seen him before, but it was when Trey Radcliffe kind of came on the scenes with Google Plus about a year ago, and all his photography.
Never heard of him.
Most of it is HDR stuff, and it's just brilliant. And I remember thinking, oh, man, how did this guy get this shot? And I didn't realize at the time that it was, there was a little bit of exposure trickery going on in there to make that
and
work.
HDR can be overdone. It can make it look really cartoonish. I like HDR. It's right on the edge of believability, a little bit maybe off the edge.
Kathleen, do you shoot much HDR at all in your stuff, or is it all just
I've never done HDR, so it would be something completely new to me, but I do composites, like what Mike said. Like, if you've ever seen, I should have probably sent you one, but if you've ever seen a picture of a newborn holding their head up in their hands like this, that is a composite, or should I say it should be done as a composite, because newborns don't have the muscles in their neck or their back to be holding their own heads up by themselves. And so the way that I do that is that I pose the baby like this, and then I have the mom or the dad hold by the wrists right here, and then one over the head. And so there's hands here and hands here, and I say, okay, take one off, and they'll move a hand, and I'll snap, 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 and then they'll put it back, and then I'll say, okay, move the other hand, snap, 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 and then I take the two images in Photoshop, and I layer them over each other, and I remove mom and dad's hands, so it looks like the baby's just sitting there holding their own little head up.
Wow. Trickery.
Yeah.
I've done that with my son, where I've had him sitting at a table, handed himself a phone. So you put it on a tripod. You have him sitting on one side. He's dressed one way. He's handing the phone over to a kid on the other side of the table. He changes his clothes, goes, sits on the other side of the table, take another photo, and then I blend them together in Photoshop, and it looks like they're there's one photo. And the important thing there is that there are us on a tripod. I don't know. Do you do yours on a tripod, Kathleen? Or is it all just really fast?
It's really quick. And if that baby's head moves to the left or the right, like even a quarter of an inch, it can't be done, because then the baby looks like an alien. Yeah. you got to be really careful. But, I mean, even what I'm doing with composites is just skimming the top of the composite world. I mean, the stuff that's being done out there with people looking like they're getting eaten by sharks, or they've been swallowed into a table, or it's just ridiculous. It's crazy. It's fun stuff.
Now, the one thing I will say about HDR is it generally is not good to do HDR of people. People HDR does not come through very well. You got to be very, very careful with HDR on the people.
Okay. Well, good stuff, guys. Let's get to this Drobo giveaway, but I do appreciate you guys coming out. I mean, we are just scratching the surface, and so I'll tell folks, if you're listening to this, maybe you're a home tech listener, and you've heard this, and you're like, oh, man, I got to get more photography stuff. Mike and Kathleen and Tim are out there every week, Tuesday nights, 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern. Is that right?
Yep. I really like to start.
And,
go ahead, Kathy.
If you go back in our show archives, we did a whole show on how to shoot manual, which was very in-depth. It's a great starting point. I mean, we kind of briefly talked about the exposure triangle, but we definitely talked about it more in-depth on that show. So if that's what you want to do, jump out of manual, take your food out of the microwave and start cooking it the real way so you can get different results, then that'd be a great show to start with.
Good stuff.
And I've often thought about going back and doing a whole basic show, starting on another podcast that is just about basics. But you want to get in Drobo, right?
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming out first and appreciate you guys doing what you do. And then I will, let's, Mike, why don't you talk a little bit about the accounting procedures that went into this Drobo giveaway, because it was a big deal.
It was. And so here's what we do. We take all the entries, and some people did more than one thing. Some people did one thing. You only had to like both of our pages. So I take all those entries, bring them into Excel, and then I sort out and have one line per person. So Kathleen did not enter, but let me use her as an example. Let's say she did the three possible things. She would have three entries in there. But so that your entries do not stay all jumbled together, so I don't know what Christian's going to pick, but let's say he's going to pick a low number or a high number. If you were the opposite of that, you would have no chance. So in order to make it even more fair, I then assign a random number to every person and then sort the list by that random number. So if you had three entries, most likely your three entries are nowhere near each other. They're spread out throughout the whole list. And Christian has no idea who's on this list and where they're at.
He hasn't. So, we had triple control on this, right? So Mike, Mike had all the names and did the randomization, and then Christian is going to pick this. He gave it to me, and I had Christian pick the number, and I gave it back to Mike. And Christian, what you're going to pick the number? What was it?
I think I've decided tonight on 87.
87.
87. The lucky winner is 8.
All right, I got the name here.
Pull that up.
I'm going to put it into the chat, if you don't mind. And then I'll let you actually say the name if you want there, Christian.
And the winner of the 2012 Home Tech and JPEG to RAW Robo Giveaway is nice. Amish Gangar.
Amish Gangar is the winner of the Drobo. Congratulations, Amish. And we will be tracking him.
Is he
we'll be
there?
Tracking. I don't. Let's see, Amish. Have you joined us?
I don't see his name in chat.
I don't see.
You know who I do see out there is Melissa Sanchez. She used to win everything for us. Let me. she's not going to like this.
Oh, she's not.
Sorry, Melissa. You didn't win.
No, but her name is three names below that winner.
Oh man.
I think
90. 90.
Hold on.
There's 87. She is, so 90.
Yeah, she's 90.
90.
Oh, man, Melissa, you should be playing the you should Powerball. Be playing the lottery every week.
Yeah, no joke.
Melissa, for those people who don't know, Melissa's won two of our giveaways, and I think the only reason she's only won two is because she actually stopped entering because she was winning so much.
Guys, I want to tell you this.
Would she be embarrassed if she won?
No, keep entering, Melissa. You're fine.
This partnership between JPEG to RAW and the Average Guy has been a lot of fun. Mike, you and I have known each other a long time now, and in internet years, and it's been fun to get the two groups together. And it was just nice to have a lady on the podcast for a change, and that always adds value to what we do here. Kathleen, thank you for doing it. Tim, good to have you on as well, and
thank you.
Good to have you hanging around. Mike, you get to join us about every 4 weeks, so. Whatever
Wait,
for you.
Back up.
I hear him on a lot more often than when I listen to your podcast.
Did you just say lady in quotes?
No,
oh,
of course I did.
You did not say that. Did you?
What is that about?
And Jim was the one saying he had to lecture us on behavior.
Did I really do that?
That is insinuating she's not a lady.
Someone, listen,
I'm pretty sure I didn't do that. I'm pretty sure I didn't do that. But there's video evidence.
It's a good thing this is not recorded, so you can't tell that.
You know, Kathleen, I pick on you a lot, but I would never question your ladyhood.
I almost let that slide, but
It's good to have you on, and I'll remind folks, again, JPEG to RAW is on Tuesday evening, 7:30 Central, 8:30 Eastern, jpegtoraw.com or novstudios.com if you want to go out there and listen to those. We will do another show next Thursday right here. If this is the first time you listen to it, we talk way more tech than this than we did tonight, but we are on Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, and a whole host of guys who come out and talk
quotes
tech.
Around us is okay.
we talk tech every week, and I will remind folks again, we're going to be giving away, if you didn't win the Drobo and you want to win maybe a LastPass premium subscription, we're going to be giving a bunch of those away on Tuesday night. You don't have to do anything except show up for the show. So if you show up 7 p.m., and I'll tweet this, you can follow at Jay Collison on Twitter, watch the Facebook page. But 7 p.m. Eastern, or 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern next Tuesday. Mike, I'm sorry that's during your show. I apologize for that.
No, and that means I can't win.
Well, JPEG to RAW listeners, Mike records his show every week, so you can come
wait
out.
Wait a second.
Oh, whoa.
You can't be pawning our listeners.
Christian, hit mute on him.
So while you're saying that, I should say our next giveaway is going to be something like this. This is mine, but it didn't come in today. It should have come in today, but this is a Intuos Wacom or Wacom tablet that we're going to be giving away. That's as one giveaway ends, the next one begins. That one is going to be the next thing we give away.
I might have to have dual screens going on so I can be entering the Average Guy giveaway since
right.
I can't win anything on our show.
That's right. You know, so Kathleen, just for dissing you a couple times on the show tonight, I will automatically add you as an entry to the last pass.
I love
contest.
It. Yes.
Automatically.
What about Tim and I?
Finally.
Nah, you guys are just guys.
Just guys.
You have to be a lady to get the free.
Be a lady.
To be a lady.
Jim, it was a lot of fun coming on tonight. I always like going back to the basics because there's a lot of people who don't understand all that stuff, and it's good to go back to the basics. We've kind of gotten to now where we're just interviewing some of the higher end photographers and talking about what they do, and that's very interesting. I love doing that, but also love going back to the basics.
Well, it's great having you guys. Well, this will end the live part of the broadcast. Mike, we do it just like you, so we'll end the live part of the broadcast here, and folks can hang around for some after chat. If you guys can stay around, you're welcome to do that. And we'll do this all again next Thursday, 8 o'clock Central, 9 Eastern. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Stop making fun of my HP keyboard. Gosh. Leave me alone.
Oh, that's your baby. I was going to say, Kathleen, your kids are too old to be making that kind of noise.
Yeah, she's Miss Cranky Pants again. Oh, actually, my wife just said she's talking up there.
Oh, that's sweet.
Kathleen, how old are yours?
How old am I?
Yes, how old are yours? Your children.
Oh, my kids.
I'm going to ask you how old you are. Come on, guys, don't do that.
We're not that crazy.
As long as we're on that, how much do you weigh?
She's like, yeah, right, you're going to get that.